it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You can watch the show anytime via our live stream on Twitch.
Just go to twitch.tv/BostonWEEI.
And check out WEEI on YouTube for our video on-demand content updated daily. Now, more of WEEI Afternoons.
With Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
Tuesday at 4:30 on WEEI Afternoons. That means two things. We're going to hear Morgan Wallen, because that's the intro music for former Patriots quarterback Brian Hoyer. Mr. Hoyer, how are we doing this week?
I'm great. I mean, I think all of New England is great this week.
Absolutely. So I'm going to challenge you. We all love Drake May here. Me, you, Ted, everybody. But I'm sure you've been following on social media and all the talk shows. I'm going to challenge you to say something more bombastically positive about Drake May than has already been said. Because it's, I mean, Greg Olson said he looked like a guy that's going to be the best quarterback in football. Like, I said he's going to go to the Patriots Hall of Fame. Like, you need to one-up all of us.
Well, I'll go with something off the field. And I said this last year, and Ted and I did a few post-game shows. The way he carries himself, I think a lot of people are obviously talking about what he's done on the field, and it's been magnificent. But the thing that I'm most excited about, and we had him on our podcast last week, just his, as the kids would put it, his aura. I mean, he's supremely confident, but he's humble, and he kind of has this aw shucks attitude about him. Never gets too high, never gets too low. And look, the reality is, at that position, adversity's coming. And he had to deal with a lot of adversity as a young rookie last year on a not a great situation. And when you think about where he's at today, he was making his first career start a year ago this week, in week six. And where he's come in a year is, in my opinion, about 3 years worth of development. And so he's coming along fast. And the one thing I love to see was his personality starting to show a little bit too. We saw it 2 weeks ago with the Superman celebration. We saw it this past weekend with a big, you know, get off the bench and scream and yell. And that to me is just showing that his confidence is growing, not only in himself, but the team.
It's such a good point. The Superman thing I thought was, well, okay, all right, Drake, that's a really good example to use. But let's continue that thinking off the field impact and on the field impact. But with Steph Diggs, Steph Diggs, it feels like, Brian, going into that game, he was the fourth most efficient receiver, you know, as far as catches versus targets in the NFL. And my guess is after last week, he's probably even higher than that this week. But what did you see from Steph Diggs this week, his leadership off the field, but also the impact he's having on the field?
Yeah, I think the one thing, and Ted, you would probably agree with me on this, you could be a great leader in the locker room, but until you do it on the field, it really doesn't carry much weight. And so Steph is just what he's done in the past few weeks. The leadership that he brings on the field is resonating with the entire team, with that receiver room. And the one thing I think we're seeing, and I know a lot was made, they asked him, you know, what's your comfort level? He said 5 out of 10. He's got to be feeling great about where he's at in the system right now, because he's getting moved all over the place. We see him inside. We see him outside. You see him with short routes, intermediate, deep routes. And his feel for the game and his feel for how to play with Drake May, and it probably goes back to playing with Josh Allen, right? Extending the plays. We saw the beautiful throw in slow motion. I'm sure everybody's watched it 10 times. But his reaction to Drake scrambling and getting to where he needed to go, and Drake letting the ball rip before he had even fully committed to where he was going to go, it just shows the level of comfortability that they have, and I think it's going to continue to grow. And I think we all should give Stephon Diggs so much praise. I mean, this guy coming off of an ACL injury. And yeah, we saw all the videos in the offseason, but he's really starting to come along. And that's not an easy injury to come back from. I went through it, and all I had to do was play quarterback. So I can't imagine the cutting and, you know, getting hit and changing directions. He looks phenomenal. And I think, too, you know, as your career gets longer, you have you gain perspective. And I think that's what you're seeing. You see a very mature Stephon Diggs, a very passionate Stephon Diggs, and it's a great thing for the Patriots.
Brian, I got two questions for you here. One, real quick, did the Bengals call you?
No, they did not. But that was a crazy. We were recording our podcast today, and our producer came on, and obviously we don't air to the next day. We were like, breaking news. But honestly, that could save the Bengals' season. I think Joe Flacco paired with those receivers, I think that gives them a chance to hold on and hold out hope that Joe Burrow might be able to come back.
Okay, and back to reality. Exactly. Can you sort of like set the scene for the audience? At, you know, all the great work that Josh and Vrabel and Drake are doing up there with Diggs, but exactly how hostile, how difficult is it to play in Buffalo on a Sunday night with 70,000 people screaming at you, ready to dominate the Patriots and, you know, try to continue their stranglehold on the AFC? Just how difficult an environment is it to play that good a game?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that I loved was they did not shy away from what they were going into. Vrabel talked about it. Look, we want the whole world to be watching. This is what you want. And the team basically played that way, right? And it is Highmark Stadium. Unless they go back there for a playoff game, the last Patriots game there goes out on a good note. But I was watching the warm-ups, and I had played a few night games at Highmark Stadium, and it was the first time since I was done playing with the excitement going into the game. I was like, man, I wish I was out there right now. It's just it's an incredible environment. They hate us so much. So to go in there and beat them, I wonder if they're sitting there today thinking, is our window closed? Are the Patriots back after they've owned us all those years with Tom Brady and we had our little window and we weren't able to take advantage of it? That's what I wonder if they're thinking up there in Buffalo right now.
Former Patriots quarterback Brian Hoyer here on WEEI Afternoons. Brian, everybody is now assuming the Patriots are going to make the playoffs, assuming they're going to go on this crazy winning streak here because the schedule looks easy with the Saints and some other teams on the horizon. How big a challenge is that for Mike Vrabel and this team? You've won a couple good games in a row, but now it's about winning the games you're supposed to, consistency. How big a challenge is that next step?
Yeah, that's a big challenge, and we'll see the maturity of this team. I just want to go on the record and say everybody thought I was crazy when I said the floor was 8 games and the ceiling was 11. Now people are saying 14 wins. I'm like, you know, people thought I was crazy. I was recording our podcast with David Andrews, and he's like, I'm ready to buy Super Bowl tickets. I said, let's roll here.
Ted's got him in the AFC title game.
No, I don't.
I mean, look, the reality is, I would say going into Sunday night, everyone would say that the favorite to win the AFC and go to the Super Bowl was the Buffalo Bills. Well, you just went in, and it wasn't a fluke. You went in and beat them at home. Now, I think the real test will be, how did the Patriots respond this week in a game that they're technically supposed to win? And now it's a team that everyone thinks stinks, but actually gave Buffalo a run for their money in the Saints a few weeks ago, and then they beat the Giants. So how do they respond to a big win? How do they go down and make sure they handle business? And I saw next week on Tuesday at 4:30, we'll all have a good feeling of where this Patriots team is as far as maturity and competitiveness.
It's so true. You got to validate, that win against Buffalo by beating the Saints. That's a good point, Brian. I want to go to the defensive side, and I want to talk about, I don't know, I did a deep dive on this play, the Marcus Jones interception and the breakdown with Phil Perry last night, and talking about defensive disguising, and the Patriots did a good job disguising. I think Josh thought he was thrown into a cover two look when it really was a cover one rat. You know, Jalen Hawkins came down and Marcus Jones undercut at that. Just can you talk about teams that are able to disguise their coverage and how impactful that can be, disrupting even the smartest quarterbacks, Brian?
Yeah, no doubt. I think the one thing we should talk about there is the with getting Christian Gonzalez back, it allows Marcus Jones to play inside where he's really a natural, great nickel corner. And what they did is, you're right, Ted, the movement of coverage after the snap is always, for me as a quarterback, was the hardest, because if you just lined up and play, and some of the teams that have had great defenses like the Legion of Boom, there was no disguising. They were playing it, and they were just saying, we're better than you. Now, some of the teams that were able to disguise coverage and make you read it after the snap and then with a rush, those were always very difficult because you had to see it with the pressure coming around you. And I think they do a good job of that. And I go back to the last time I played against a Vrabel team when we were playing them in 2018. They actually beat us that year with a lot of different exotic blitz looks, late coverage rotations, things like that. And so they're pairing that with some good players. And look, Josh Allen is the MVP. He's going to get his one way or the other. And there was parts of that game you're like, all right, here he comes. But they were able to withstand, you know, some of the punches that he was throwing. And I think some of that was mixing up the defense and making him read it after the snap.
Okay, so obviously he's advanced and he's growing and he's evolving and there's all the national and local praise. It's insane. You cannot open a social media app without seeing or hearing somebody say something outrageous about Drake May. So, Brian, what's next? Like, what is if he's now processing so well and he's reading defenses and he's making big time plays and he's winning road games in hostile environments? What's the next step we can look forward to?
Well, I think the one thing that we really haven't seen a lot is just incorporating the zone read, the RPOs, all of those things. And I think the one thing you're seeing is Josh McDaniels has now called, you know, five games with Drake May as his quarterback. And I think it was very telling. The first play of the game was a boot to the left for a right-handed quarterback to Diggs. Yeah. He's getting more and more comfortable calling some of those movement plays. And also, look, there's certain teams that are better to zone read and RPO. And so I think as the season goes on and Josh is studying the tape and he sees some teams that are getting exposed by that, I think you'll see more use of Drake's legs in the running game. And I think the thing for Drake is just to keep on processing. I mean, he's done a good job of getting through his reads. One that comes to my mind right now is getting back to the backside and throwing the seam ball to Hunter Henry. So he's getting very comfortable with that. And then when things aren't there, he has the ability to escape and make highlight reel plays. And so I think the one thing he's just got to be conscious of is, you know, not putting himself in harm's way. We've talked about young quarterbacks knowing when to protect themselves. And, you know, he slid the other night and got hit high. I mean, there's only so much you can do. And I think that's in his head. He's making smart decisions. And look, I think the sky's the limit because he's showing that he can be a dropback passer, be very efficient, be very accurate. And when things aren't there, he can be just as dangerous out on the run. And so I think the biggest thing for him is just keep progressing and stay healthy.
Brian, before we let you go, I wanted to tap into your wealth of knowledge, a lot of teams, a lot of coaches. The other night when Mike Vrabel is meeting every player in the tunnel on the way from the field to the locker room, how unique is that? How impactful is that for the players and the team? Is that common? Have you seen that before? What were your thoughts on that?
No, I think it's great. I think we all realize now Vrabel is what you would call a player's coach. Now, he's tough on them, and he holds them accountable, but he's been in that situation before. He knows what it feels like to win a big game and to be there on your way back in the locker room ecstatic and celebrate with the head coach. I think it's important. We should give Vrabel credit. I mean, two guys who a few weeks ago people were ready to kind of, you know, hey, cut him or bench him, Borregales and Mondre. And Mondre had another fumble, but he's sticking with him. I mean, Gibson goes down, and he's had their back, and I think that goes a long way. So I think he's doing a really good job, and I think it's important. Look, sometimes the coach meets you in the locker room, sometimes he meets you outside of the locker room. But I think the one thing that you're seeing is the team is taking on Vrabel's mentality, and they are willing to battle it for this coach, and I think that's what you want.
All right, Brian, appreciate you joining us. Good insight as always. We'll talk to you next week when the Patriots will literally be in the Super Bowl already based on the way things are tracked.
It's a start, though.
Yeah, right. We'll see. I think they should go down there and handle business. I think it could be a Panthers-type game. So,
but Rattler's playing better. Business. Don't you think Rattler's playing better than you thought, maybe?
No, he is. I mean, he's young. There's nothing to lose. He can throw it. Yeah. He's athletic. So they're going to have to contain him. And Gonzalez, I'm sure, will match up with Olave. And then I think offensively, I just want to see a complete game. I want to get the running game going. I think Travion Henderson will get more reps in practice. We'll see him more in the game. And Drake just continue to look comfortable out there.
All right, thanks, Brian. Talk to you next week.
Thanks, Brian. See you.
All right, see you guys.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. That was former Patriots quarterback Brian Hoyer. Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, we need to do a little bit of a deeper dive into a couple of those answers. Players coach, Mike Vrabel. I'm not sure we knew Mike Vrabel was definitively a players coach, but Brian Hoyer says it is so. That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.